Welcome to the first Shadrick Siding Podcast. I'm JP Shadrick. Now, the Jaguars are headed to face the New England Patriots, the defending Super Bowl champions, this Sunday at Gillette Stadium. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff. But it's also the start of a long stretch of road games for the Jags. Three straight, New England, Indy, and Tampa Bay. But the Jags will also play six of their next seven games away from Everbank Field. The only game at Everbank, October 18th against Houston. The week after that, the Jags are in London against the Buffalo Bills. Today we'll visit with the man who puts all those trips together and gets the Jaguars from point A to point B, Hamza Ahmad, the director of football logistics. He has quite a task ahead of him over the next couple of months, but it doesn't come without a lot of planning in the offseason. We'll break down how all that happens. And of course, the big matchup this Sunday at Gillette Stadium against the New England Patriots. We'll visit with the voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy, to see where the Patriots' mindset is after all that's happened in the offseason and after a 2-0 and a really good start here in 2015. We continue now with the Jaguars' director of football logistics and facilities, Hamza Ahmad. Hamza, that's just a fancy word for traveling secretary, right?
That's correct.
This is a fun time. I don't know. Is this fun for you? Three straight trips, or is this really your busy time?
It's a challenge, but it's fun. It's definitely a lot of moving parts. That I'm trying to manage at the same time, but no, it's definitely a lot of fun.
So you start the planning process for these trips, I mean, months in advance. This is not just you're showing up game week ready to, let's get a plane and a hotel, right?
Yeah, I spend the second half of March and early April looking and going on site visits to these hotels. I've got a little draft board in my room of the top 4 to 5 hotels I'd like to take the team per city. And then meet with them, meet with the properties, see the conditions, see how far they are from the stadium, from the airport, and get a general idea of exactly how we would come into the hotel, where we park, what the elevators look like, and meet with the hotels. Because our overall, we look for about 180 guest rooms, okay. 180,
wow.
And then about 7 meeting spaces. That includes the offense team room, defense, a training room, 2 breakout rooms, a boardroom for the QBs. There's also production meetings that happen in that boardroom, as well as the largest room, which would be the meal room. So we take over a good portion of the hotel, after looking at all the hotels, then I'll come back mid-April, put them all on the board, and wait for the schedule to come out. And then once the schedule comes out, that's when we find out if hotels have that availability or not, because we don't know the date yet until the schedule actually drops in April. So corporate America, they're able to book things 1 or 2 years out. So there's times where we're unable to go to a hotel because they're already booked because of a wedding, a conference, a convention, or something else going on in the city.
So you have to have Plan B everywhere too.
Plan B, really? C, D, yeah. Try to if usually top 4 is what we try to go to, and then if that doesn't work out, we'll go to 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, and 8, and if that doesn't work, then I'll go back out to the city and look for a couple other options. But out of the 10 domestic trips, 8 of the cities are usually pretty decent, and then we usually have challenges in about 2 of them.
180 rooms?
Yeah, it's
all of these rooms go to?
We bring a lot of folks with us. That includes players, coaches, doctors, trainers, equipment, football technology. You guys, you guys come with us. So .com, the social media folks. We bring a lot of folks.
Do those numbers fluctuate on a weekly basis? How often do they change,
I guess? It's pretty accurate. For the preseason, we travel with about 184 people in the preseason. And then when the roster is reduced, then our normal football traveling party is about 150, 155 for regular season. And then London is a whole other ball game. that's at the 225 range.
We'll get to London coming up. Okay. Hamza Ahmad is with us, Director of Football Logistics. Let's go through this 3-game road trip coming up.
Mm-hmm.
New England, Indy, Tampa, of course, this team's very familiar with going to Indianapolis a lot. But what are some differences between these 3 cities coming up? New England for you, how difficult is this trip?
It's our first regular season road game, so it was nice to have two home games in a row to start planning or to continue planning these 3 road games in a row. It takes exactly or approximately about 10 days to really put the game together. So I'm already working. I closed up the New England trip late yesterday, a little bit of cleanup today, but really we've already talked to the Indianapolis Hotel yesterday, had a conference call with them, working on the rooming list for the next game. So I know coaches stick to a week-to-week game plan, but we have to be about 10 days to about 2 weeks ahead of each road game. So New England's a different one. Haven't done that trip in a while. We're staying in Providence, and then Foxborough is a good 35 minutes from the hotel. But majority of the teams stay in Providence. They don't stay in Boston because Foxborough is located in between those two locations. Indy's Indy. We've done it a bunch. We'll be staying downtown again. So that's it'll be nice to have a game in the middle of those three that we're used to. Mm-hmm. And then Tampa will be a trip it's close by, so there'll be some staff that may drive, maybe some of our video crew. So a little bit of logistics will be different. But coming from Atlanta, we went to Tampa each year, so I'm very familiar with that operation there.
That's the interesting part of this, too. You mentioned the Atlanta portion of this. You were in Atlanta, but you're from Jacksonville, mm-hmm. too. That's the, mm-hmm. you get to kind of a full circle thing.
Mm-hmm. I went to middle school and high school here in Jacksonville, went to Nice High School, graduated here, went to University of Florida, graduated there in 2004, and then did an internship with the Falcons. Ended up doing a total of three internships with them, waited tables in between, et cetera, you know, the whole intern world. And spent eight seasons with them before coming here in 2013.
What was the restaurant you waited tables?
Jocks and Jill's was the one in Atlanta.
CNN Center one?
There were about 10 of them. So
it's funny though. You started doing that, and what was the internship in? The first training camp summer intern.
So driving players back and forth from the hotel, making sure Gatorades and waters were stocked in the dorms. We had camp up at Furman University in Atlanta my first year there. So just kind of handling all the operations on that end.
So you just wanted to foot in somewhere. It wasn't necessarily in travel and all that, right?
No, I was more of events, game entertainment. So I handled the Anthem Color Guard halftime shows, but then also did the draft day parties, golf tournaments. So more of an event planner was my background in Atlanta.
So why'd you shift to travel?
I bugged the travel guy each year. I was interested in just seeing the football side of things. I was on the events and the marketing side, and bugged the travel guy for 4 years, seeing if he needed a hand. And 4 years into the job in Atlanta, he did need somebody to come in, so I helped out week of. Would do the travel advance, go out to the city early, learned a lot about the football side of things, and just wanted to keep an open mind on both the events and marketing side as well as the travel side. And then the opportunity became available to come here and handle the team travel, and couldn't say no to it. It was back in my hometown and definitely a fun part of the operation.
Would you have ever imagined working for the Jaguars?
No. I mean, I remember growing up watching all the games when they first came here. I don't think I missed a single game for the first 4 years, either on TV or in person. So it's definitely cool being back. Definitely very thankful to be back in Jacksonville.
We mentioned London a moment ago. That's the real big difference in what the Jaguars do compared to all the other 31 teams in the league. A game a year. This is the original four-year contract. The word is it could be extended through, 15 more years or so coming up. That aside, that throws another wrench into your schedule each year, and that's a different animal now, the London game.
It is. And the challenge, it's a very, very fun project to work on. It takes a long time to put it together. I mean, we start working on it in November of 2014. They announced our 2015 game while we were out there in 2014.
Right. Yeah.
And right then and there, I'm reaching out to the hotels to see if they have availability for the following year.
Because you're already there.
We're already there. The challenge with 2015 this year is the Rugby World Cup is in London, so we wanted to get in front of all the hotel rooms, and with the amount of space that we take over, make sure that we've got the hotels have the availability that we need there. And then we do a planning trip out in February to go look at the available hotels, practice sites, come back in March. We make a decision from there in March of which property we want to go to. And then right after OTAs, the middle of June, we'll go back out for one more planning trip with the properties that we chose back in March and April. So it's a London's a full year long project. It's fun. It's a lot of work for 1/20th of our season, but it's nice that we're We've done it a couple years in a row now. We've done something completely different the first year versus the second year and now versus the third year. So first year we went from Jacksonville. We played a home game against the Chargers.
That's right.
Left on Monday, spent a full week out there, and then came back after the game. The second year, it was Florida, Georgia, departure day.
That's right.
So we played the Cincinnati Bengals that weekend on November 2nd.
Uh-huh.
And so played the Bengals, went straight from Cincinnati to London, mm-hmm. spent a week out there, and then came back. And this year we're doing a shorter trip. Four out of the six teams are doing a shorter trip. They've,
really?
Yeah, they've seemed to – the feedback we've gotten is the – it's nice to get a lot of your – football work done during the week here, all your game planning, all your practices, all your lifting, and then leave Thursday night and then do a short weekend, get there Friday morning, do a practice on Friday afternoon at Alliance Park is where we're going this year.
If I remember right, that's where the Cowboys trained last year, right?
Correct. Cowboys, a lot of the teams have done that. Miami's done that. I believe the Jets are planning to do that. But it's a rugby field. It's a field turf, so weather is not too much of an issue with the fields being wet with that practice. So, and then Saturday, Sunday will be our exact same what we're used to doing. We're staying at the same hotel as we did last year, mm-hmm. so there'll be a lot of familiarity with the hotels and the practice site out there.
Is it relieving that it's a shorter trip for you personally?
It's. Some portions are the same. You still have to deal with passports. You still have to deal with the same amount of people to get out there. The challenge of departing on – you know, we had a walkthrough the same day that Florida-Georgia was last year. So we got out of the building by, I want to say, 10 a.m., and the game was at 3:30 here. So that was wow. that was a logistical challenge. So it's nice. I'm excited about leaving from Jacksonville. And last year it was two different hotels and a whole practice site, locker room, weight room that we had to set up. So this year it'll be definitely less set up out there.
So remember, the Jags are on the road the next 3 weeks. They don't just show up at the plane. It has to be there and ready for them. Hamza Ahmad's the guy that gets that done. We appreciate your time, man.
Thank you.
Now, of course, the first of those road trips is this Sunday at New England. The defending Super Bowl champion Patriots await. It's a 1 o'clock kick Sunday at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Now, the Patriots, of course, have the best offense through two games in the National Football League, the best passing offense, at least Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, and all the rest. They seem to have overcome what happened to them in the offseason. They were, of course, in the headlines nationally throughout the offseason for the deflated football scandal. That seems to be past them, or is it? Well, we sat down with Voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy, to find out.
It's time to go behind enemy lines and visit with the Voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy. Bob, how are you?
I'm great, JP. How are you doing?
Doing great. Week three, the Jags have quite a task ahead of them this week against the defending Super Bowl champions. You know, this is the Patriots have been in the news all off season, but everything is now past them, all the deflated football controversy and stuff. They don't really need a lot of motivation to begin with, but is there any added motivation after all they went through this off season?
Well, JP, I'm holding my breath or crossing my fingers or both. Hopefully, all of that other stuff is behind us because it's been really an amazing seven-month saga, plus after the Super Bowl championship, of course. For this team and this franchise, of course, a complete swing of emotions and twists and turns, any cliche you want to come up with. But I think for the players themselves, their motivation remains the same in a narrow sense, week in, week out. You know, in New England under Bill Belichick, they've always won by the same kind of formula of preparation and attention to detail and taking the next task as it comes and placing utter importance on that next task and only that next task, whether it's today's practice, the film session that follows, the game that follows, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the broader view for the fans, the media, and perhaps inside that locker room is that indeed this is a team that had its championship in some quarters question and is a team that is out to prove to the football world once again that it is the best in the NFL. And I think what Tom Brady in particular experienced over the course of the Deflategate saga, I think it has provided a lot of motivation for his teammates and for as I say, the fans themselves, I think, you know, people in New England have really carried this collective chip on their shoulders for a long period of time now. And they're behind their quarterback, they're behind their team, and I think the motivation that they have from what the organization has gone through since the AFC Championship game last year is on top of the motivation that exists here year in, year out, and that's in the context that anything short of a championship is a disappointment around here.
Bob Soucy is with us, the voice of the New England Patriots. Could Tom have started the season any better?
You know, it's hard to imagine a way that he could have been better against Pittsburgh and Buffalo. In particular, you know, you look at the Buffalo Bills defense, and granted, Rex Ryan may not be able two games into his tenure there to do all the things that he wanted to do as a defensive coordinator and head coach. But when he was in New York, he certainly presented a lot of problems with his defenses for the Patriots, and especially the last couple of years. But for Brady to come out and carve up that defense the way he did, 466 yards passing, a record for most passing yards against the Bills defense, for a young offensive line playing three rookies extensively on the interior to protect Brady enough, and for him not only to have Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman at his disposal, but other guys like Aaron Dobson, like Amendola, made a sensational catch in that Buffalo game, or a guy like Mike Williams, and in the Pittsburgh game, a Scott Chandler, tight ends that he could throw to, and in Chandler's case, he caught a touchdown in week one. He's been able to spread the field, take him out of the offense per usual, but he's gone to more than just Gronk and Edelman in the early stages of 2015. So he's seeing the field exceptionally well as he ever has. He's throwing the ball extremely well. He had a lot of zip on his passes downfield, certainly in Buffalo. There were a number of drops in that game. I think some of the players were fighting the sun, but also some guys who were very reliable couldn't hold on to balls. Otherwise, the numbers would have been even more impressive. But he's locked in. He's continued where he left off at Super Bowl 49, and I think you go back to week 5 of 2014, that Cincinnati game, the real turning point for this organization in the last year after a 2-2 start and a lopsided loss against Kansas City on Monday Night Football. Brady has been absolutely phenomenal.
Bob Soucy is with us from the New England Patriots. You know, Bill Belichick had some interesting comments. You mentioned Gronkowski. He was talking about his tight end this week and was asked about his leadership. You know, there's a lot of flash with Gronk. You see him on every billboard and advertisements and out and about. But this is, for them, a model player to have around that organization, according to Belichick.
Well, you see him a lot, too, on cell phone videos and Facebook and various other social media vehicles, having a lot of fun with his brothers in particular, and occasionally, of course, some movie stars, maybe on the set of Entourage or some other scene, the Kentucky Derby, for example, this year. But, you know, the thing that gets lost with all that, as much fun and as large as Gronk lives life, this is a guy who is committed to football. And as Bill Belichick said in his press conference, going back to the comments you've referred to, he can never recall, since Gronkowski joined the team in 2010, any instance when he did not try his hardest with any task the coaches assigned to him, whether it was blocking, route running, whether it was lifting weights, conditioning. And he is a guy that is very football smart, and I think that gets lost, too, because of his fun-loving ways. He has a great acumen for the game. He understands the concept of the offense. He understands how routes work in relationship to one another for various receivers. He understands what Tom Brady is trying to do. They're always on the same page, it seems. And that's not only from a mental standpoint, but physically, because they invest a lot of extra time in their routes during the preseason, and when they have opportunities off on a side field, for example, in training camp, they'll take those opportunities and work on it. Gronk is a guy who spends time studying video. He's a guy who's an excellent teammate, very popular with his teammates. Again, despite a guy who's had so much attention paid to him outside the organization, you know, you don't have any friction whatsoever between Gronk and Brady and Edelman and the rest of those guys in that locker room. And that's pretty amazing to me, the uniqueness of it. A lot of teams get fractured, of course, after championships because celebrity status takes hold and some guys may become less committed to their craft. Not Gronkowski nor those other two guys that I mentioned, Brady and Edelman, who in particular have been perhaps most visible off the field since Super Bowl 49.
Bob Soucy is with us, longtime voice of the Navy midshipman, now in his third season with the New England Patriots. You know, the defense for the Patriots has left a little bit to be desired here. They haven't really stopped the run the first couple of weeks. That's where the Jaguars might have a chance to maybe play keep away from Brady this week if they can run the ball effectively against New England. What's going on with the defense in New England?
Well, you know, JP, first of all, you have to start in the middle of the defensive line and the absence of Vince Wilfork. 11 years is one of the best on the interior, a guy who occupied two blockers regularly and did so much to enable so many great linebackers here on the course of the last decade plus to make plays against the run. Vince now, of course, is a Houston Texan. Andy, in his place, they've got some young kids, in particular Malcolm Brown, the first-round pick out of the University of Texas. But I also think you have to look at the function of the defense, or at least the approach of the defense in the first 2 weeks, especially in the Pittsburgh game. There were a lot of nickel and dime packages in that game. The Patriots have gone a little bit lighter up front as it is, even when you take into account some of the defensive linemen they've employed the last couple of years. But in that particular game, it was almost as if, and I'm not saying they wanted to give up 120-plus yards to D'Angelo Williams, it was almost as if they put all those DBs on the field to say to Pittsburgh, run the ball, we're okay with that, we'll give you the 4, 5, 6 yards, we're not going to give up the big plays over the top. That's a similar approach to what they did against Peyton Manning and the Broncos. No, Sean Moreno had 200-plus yards in Foxborough a couple of years ago. New England won the game. Still, against Buffalo, they allowed Tyrod Taylor to get out of the pocket, and he made some plays with his legs. And I think that's a concern. It's the run off the broken plays by the quarterback that really hurt them, or at least keeping plays alive out of the pocket. And Blake Bortles certainly poses a challenge there. On the other hand, you've got T.J. Yeldon, a young player that the Patriots have certainly talked a lot about in the last 24 to 48 hours, and they have a lot of respect for him. And one would imagine that Jacksonville's going to try to pound the ball with him between the tackles and see if the Patriots truly are vulnerable there. They had a difficult time with misdirection, not setting the edge. That's uncharacteristic for the guys they have out there, especially Rob Ninkovich. One figures they're going to get that cleaned up. But the one area of the defense that I think will be an open-ended question for fans around here for a long time this season is in the secondary, and whether or not this team can overcome the losses of Darrell Revis and Brandon Browner, in addition to Kyle Arrington, another regular for them at defensive back the last several years. All those guys are gone now, with Revis, of course, in New York, Arrington in Baltimore, and Browner as a New Orleans Saint.
Bob Soucy is with us, voice of the New England Patriots. Let's finish with this, Bob. You know, the view of this game outside of Jacksonville, at least, that it's all New England all day. We know that the Patriots don't think that way inside their facility, or do they? What's the view of this game when Jacksonville comes calling?
You know, JP, they don't, and I have so much respect for the way the players have gone about their business here in the 2+ years that I've covered the team. I've called games since the start of 2013. You know, I understand the concept of a trap game. You wouldn't expect it at the NFL level, yet it still occurs, it seems. But the one thing about Belichick and his staff, they're so thoroughly prepared and so detail-oriented. You know, Belichick will quiz his players each week on the personnel and the tendencies of the opposition. And he said it in his press conference yesterday, and his players echo those words in the locker room availability afterwards. He said, it's not only up to the coaches to prepare the game plan and the scheme for this contest, but it's up to the players too. They've got to learn the individuals on the other side of the ball, their mannerisms, their tendencies. And when you talk to Patriot players, you know, they'll tell you that they were quizzed extra hard early this week about the Jacksonville personnel. And I think they do have a lot of respect for what the Jags present. There's a lot of outstanding young athletes and good football players on that team. Belichick has said, you know, they're young, but at the same time, they've got a lot of experience, especially when you look at key areas. And Brady himself was talking about the ability to create turnovers, especially on the road. That's an awareness to me of what Jacksonville's done statistically, and you know better than I about the sack strips that they've had, the fumbles caused by getting to the quarterback, in particular away from home. They know Chris Clemens. They know a number of those other guys on that side of the ball, so they do have tremendous respect for the Jaguars. If this game is close, it's not because the Patriots are going to take the Jaguars lightly, and certainly not after Jacksonville beat Miami. That game, I think, raised the eyebrows of a lot of people who cover the Patriots. I think they already had a lot of respect, those within the organization, for the Jags, but certainly they're not going to be caught by surprise. I mean, Jacksonville may very well win this game, but I don't think it's because the Patriots are unprepared mentally and physically for the contest.
Bob Soucy, voice of the New England Patriots, 1 o'clock, the kickoff at Gillette Stadium coming up. We appreciate it, Bob.
Looking forward to it, JP. Thanks.
Our thanks to Jaguars Director of Football Logistics, Hamza Ahmad, and the voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soucy, for their time this week. Of course, the Jaguars kick off at 1 o'clock Sunday at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, against the New England Patriots. Our coverage on 1010XL and 92.5 FM begins with the Public's Tailgate Show. That's at 10 o'clock Sunday. And, of course, at noon, it's Countdown to Kickoff, all along the Jaguars radio network. That's it for this week on the Shadrick Siding Podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm JP Shadrick.